Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. Newsmakers is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wisi.org/donate or text WISI to 44321. This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. It is not an exaggeration to say that every vote counts in Wisconsin's fall elections, and there's particularly stiff competition for Wisconsin's rural voters. Partisan divides have deepened in Wisconsin's rural communities, making candidates work even harder to hear their concerns. We are talking with rural policy experts today on Newsmakers. We have Jason Munaini from the Wisconsin Farm Bureau, Joe Ruth from the Wisconsin Towns Association, and Jeremy Levin from the Rural Wisconsin Health Cooperative. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
So I know it's part of your organization's mission to listen to and advocate for the interests of rural residents and communities. I'd like to ask each of you, what are you hearing? What's one key theme you hear from rural residents?
I mean, I don't think rural residents are that much different than any of the other states' residents. They have the same concerns, you know, the economy, immigration, healthcare access. So I think there's a lot of similarities.
What do you hear, Joe? What's the main concern?
Yeah, I would agree that there's a lot of similarities. One main concern that I'm hearing everywhere, but maybe even heightened in the rural areas, is on the need for a focus on emergency services and funding of ambulance service in particular.
Sure, we'll be talking about those health issues. Jason, what are you hearing?
Sure, so I mean, I uniquely hear from farmers, but in the farm economy, inflation is probably the biggest driver. Farm input costs are up about 30% over the year's average. If you ask a farmer how the price of corn is, they're gonna say bad, and if you ask them how soybeans are, they're gonna say worse. So inflation, budgetary issues being the top one at the federal level, farm bill, farm programs are going to be a big challenge, but we're also hearing similar things, access to health care, child care, infrastructure, all important.
So many issues. The Wisconsin Office of Rural Health kind of identifies where are rural residents living in Wisconsin. 45 of Wisconsin's 72 counties are considered rural. The Office of Rural Health uses this map to outline the state's rural and urban counties. Counties in green on this map are defined as rural. However, the office cautions that county-based classification sometimes overlooks rural populations living in larger counties. In summary, nearly 1.5 million Wisconsinites live in rural counties that cover 34,000 square miles of rural land area. You mentioned that a priority issue really across all of your groups has to do with the health of rural residents. There are greater health disparities, there are higher uninsured rates, there are other hurdles for healthcare. Jeremy, you know this very well. I know you sent out a candidate questionnaire and talking about problems with access to local health care. Can you describe what residents experience?
Well, I mean, it is, in terms of local health care, it's, you know, the transportation getting there. It might be the coverage if they're in a commercial plan, you know, what providers are covered. And it also involves the providers that are there to the services that might be offered or might not be offered, and then would have to have them go into a larger tertiary center.
How does that affect their health?
Usually negatively. If you have to travel more often, if you have to take that day off of work, if you have to schedule someone who's going to help you get to that facility, that's, I think, always a lot more of constraints. I live in Madison and could probably walk to five hospitals within 30 minutes.
Jason, I know the mental health of farmers has become a growing concern. The state reports that the suicide rates of men ages 25 and older living in rural areas is really on the rise. They're dying at a higher rate than other populations. What is that stress on farmers? What do you see that's maybe contributing to this?
Well, it's an incredible stress. I mean, you've got a farm economy that is very challenging, very, very tight margins. So when you see things like price drops, like last year we saw, you know, the 100-weight of milk drop. This year we're seeing corn and soybeans drop. We're seeing inflation increase, and you have high debt loads, and a lot of our multi-generational farmers are sitting there saying, well, Grandpa kept the farm alive, Dad kept the farm alive, and now it's up to me to keep that multi-generational farm alive. And they're looking at the debt load. They're looking at the financial stress that they have in this economy. And it's an incredible load of stress. Now, we increased in the last budget, we increased some of the vouchers through the Farm Center, at DACAP's Farm Center, and those people do an incredible job. But there's going to need to be more services, more telehealth, more mental health and stress reduction activities. And we're working on trying to figure out a pathway forward so that those mental health services can meet farmers where they are rather than having to have them go in and, you know, seek
especially
those
with lack of providers, which we'll talk about. Joe, I know for you, you mentioned that a big concern is access to emergency response. The Office of Rural Health survey revealed that 41% of rural EMS providers lack the staffing to respond to an emergency call. Why is this happening?
Yeah, we're starting to see incredible pressures mounting. They're not new pressures, but they've really grown over time on our emergency services, and it seems to be exemplified in ambulance service in particular right now. For one, we're seeing an aging volunteer population that is really reaching a critical point. We in Wisconsin have been fortunate enough to rely largely on a volunteer or mixed volunteer and paid system for so long, and that has saved us efficiencies across the board. But as that volunteer population ages out and isn't being replaced by a younger generation, we're seeing labor shortages, we're seeing cost increase for that labor, et cetera. On top of that, we're seeing huge inflationary pressures that have really built in the last 5 years, and more than that, but significantly in the last 5 years. The cost inputs for emergency services aren't closely tied to consumer price index, to the inflation as we generally talk about it. It's actually been far beyond that with equipment costs, with labor costs, et cetera.
Safe to say you'll be asking for more funding?
It seems that we're going to have to. The shared revenue bill really was an historic increase for local governments, and that really has filled a lot of that inflationary gap, particularly for emergency services. But it hasn't allowed us to make the advances that we needed even 5 years ago.
I'll add one thing, or a couple. Since you gave them a plug earlier, the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health actually has put out a really good report looking at rural emergency services. Additionally, on the federal level, there is a ambulance bonus extender that needs to be extended before the end of the year that helps, again.
That's a critical need.
Yep.
Exactly. Jeremy, I know that a disproportionate number of rural residents mm-hmm. are uninsured. The Wisconsin Policy Forum put out a report recently saying that Medicaid expansion would significantly support rural residents in Wisconsin. Wisconsin, as I'm sure you know, one of 10 states only mm-hmm. that hasn't expanded Medicaid. Is that part of the solution, or are there other solutions?
You know, Wisconsin, yes, one of 10 that hasn't expanded Medicaid, but also the only one of those 10 that doesn't technically have an insurance gap. So I think there's multiple ways, you know, there are products or availability of health insurance out there, and whether it's education or just connecting people is equally important. I would say also the fact that, again, rural tends to be older. It's more Medicare that is that or the public payer of those residents. But there's still more that we could do to increase Medicaid reimbursement as well. That would be very helpful in the state.
Joe, I want to dive in a little bit more on that shared revenue piece that you brought up. You mentioned historic investment in shared revenue. Towns were among some of the biggest winners in that increase. Some of them saw their budget from the state double. How has that benefited towns?
It really has been great, and it has been needed. So it really was a historic increase. We haven't seen anything like that. In fact, we've seen declines in more recent memory. Like I mentioned earlier, it seems to have filled a lot of the inflationary gap that we've seen across the board. When we talk about EMS, there's those costs that run above inflation. The same goes for roads in Wisconsin, which is another huge focus of our towns and other local governments. Those road costs, the construction costs in Wisconsin, have far exceeded any kind of normal inflation rate that we talk about. And so across the board, that has really helped our towns fill those gaps. Towns did very well on a percentage basis in Wisconsin, somewhat because towns were getting so little in the past.
It was overdue.
Yeah, so if I use one example, the town that received the largest percentage increase in Wisconsin was only getting $600 in shared revenue before. It wasn't really enough to help fund any of their core services. They're still getting the least of any municipality across the state, but it was such a significant increase that they have been able to keep up, I believe, with the inflationary increases in their emergency services.
Jason, I know that roads are important in the agriculture industry and for farmers. And in the last budget, you had a win with the development of the Agriculture Road Improvement Program. You're helping farmers apply. What has been the result of that program?
Well, the first round of that program, which was a $50 million $50 million of the $150 million of the ARIP program. And this is, I want people to realize that this is the first time in the country that a agriculturally focused local road program has been created. We have states from all across the U.S. coming to Wisconsin Farm Bureau and coming to the Ag Coalition and saying, how did you guys do this? How did you put this thing together? Well, we did 37 projects. We did some really, long-standing projects that have been looking to try to get funding. And we're anticipating that we're going to blow the numbers from the first round out of the water. I mean, this is the state's most generous road program, and it's roads that probably wouldn't be prioritized. But in reality, this is where we move our commodities. This is where we move our exports. We're of course going to look to see if this program can be extended and funded into the future. But what we're really seeing is an opportunity to take some of the pressure off the towns to do the projects that they probably wouldn't prioritize for traffic purposes, but for the purposes of our economy, ARIP has been a game changer. I do want to go back to one thing when we were talking about health insurance, though. I think that we look at the uninsured number as kind of the biggest picture, but there's, in the rural portions of the state, there is such a critical and chronic underinsurance problem. And I don't think people quite understand that for our farm economy specifically, and I assume that this extends into other portions of rural areas, access to health care is the number one loss of on-farm family labor. So 83% of farms are sending somebody off the farm to go into town to get a job, to get access to health care, or the options are go without. And what we've seen from the Affordable Care Act is that those people who have farm incomes, the way that they calculate them, they don't take the advantage of the subsidy premium. So they're paying full freight regardless of what they do.
Is that something you're advocating to change?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that we have a proposal, a private program through Farm Bureau, where we can say, hey, for some of these younger farm families, there's an option to get something else. And until they fix that income plan, and it's been over a decade at this point, until they fix the way that they calculate income, a health plan through a Farm Bureau or another organization that's a little bit more affordable is something that we're going to probably have to advocate for.
And make sure that farmers have the coverage that they need.
Absolutely.
We've been hearing a lot of doom and gloom about Wisconsin's workforce across the board, but also impacting rural counties. At the Wisconsin Counties Association last week, analysts talked about how rural counties have been particularly impacted by labor force declines among working age males, 25 to 54, but also among working age women. Jeremy, I saw in your candidate questionnaire, you are advocating for child care. How is that part of the solution?
You have another potential worker that might be staying at home with kids if there was good, affordable child care in rural areas, which some of them really are a child care desert, that would allow to get that second worker you know, back in the game. And, you know, hospitals have plenty of non-clinical positions where they could easily utilize more workers and more workforce. And back to Jason's point, the co-op actually has multiple farm spouses that come in to, again, yeah, get health care insurance. So it is, you know, there's, I think, broadly speaking in terms of how some of the different plans might cover, I think the income calculation is definitely a big concern. But, I mean, making sure that they have those full array of benefits is important, too.
Joe, how does that shrinking workforce affect a local town's economy or the rural economy?
It has a massive effect. It obviously affects any of the businesses that move. Then there's a snowballing effect where you're not only not bringing new people in, but actually the people that are there start to have to move away, and it can decimate that rural, that local economy. Like childcare, which is an excellent example of a core service that really is needed in these rural areas in order to support especially young families that might want to move in. The emergency services tie right back to that as well. No one is going to want to visit, let alone move to an area, if there isn't adequate ambulance service to cover them in an emergency.
Sure. Jason, I know that the agriculture industry, the dairy industry, relies in part on an immigrant workforce. We've been hearing a lot about that issue in our elections. How does the Farm Bureau talk to candidates and policymakers about immigration reform that makes sense for Wisconsin?
Sure. I mean, the main thing that we have concern of right now is, because Wisconsin's such a heavy dairy state, the current program, the H-2A program, which isn't immigrant labor but migrant labor, seasonal, they're not allowed to work here year-round. And that's really what the need is for the dairy industry. We need year-round workers. Those challenges are, you know, few and far between, and we've, you know, gotten some increase in the cap of in H-2A workers in Wisconsin, but looking towards immigration reform in totality, you know, there have been a handful of different proposals that have been put out there, but one of the other challenges that farms have is marketing those jobs that they have available to the people who live in those communities. This isn't, you know, yesteryear. There are a lot of high-skilled farm needs and farm jobs and agribusinesses, on-farm transportation needs that pay, you know, sizable and livable wages that farms haven't been able to really get to the spot to market those unless you're in one of the big companies that is in an agribusiness. So working with some of our agencies to maybe find ways to have, you know, your smaller farms to market some of those different positions that are available is a pathway forward. At the federal level, in terms of undocumented laborers or undocumented immigrants, I think in totality that's a much larger conversation. But as far as the agricultural economy is, looking at maybe some special considerations for those who are engaging in agriculture is something that I think we would be looking at strongly.
Sure. Shifting to the workforce needs in healthcare, which are large. I'll just summarize. The Governor's Task Force on the Healthcare Workforce just issued their report this summer. They say that mostly rural areas, 40 out of 72 are federally designated as mental health shortage areas. 37 have a primary care shortage, and 34 have a dental healthcare shortage. How can this provider shortage be addressed?
Well, there are definitely, and it crosses into federal too. So those HPSAs, the health professional shortage areas that you just mentioned, can get some additional benefit. We work very closely with the Wisconsin Primary Care Office to make sure that we're trying to get advantageous loan offers, some additional bump up in pay to and reimbursement to allow for, again, that attraction. We've actually done quite a good job probably over the last 10, 12 years of really upping our Wisconsin's game in graduate medical education and adding more rural residencies, whether they're a residency track or a rotation. So
Does the state have a role there?
Yeah, well, that's actually what I'm saying. So the state's actually been the one who's really done a lot those last 12 years or so. Actually, we've been hoping to get some more rural tracks from the federal government, and so far have sort of been unsuccessful in some of the release of those rural tracks these last few years. But continual push Obviously, the more you can train, and it's across the spectrum from those doctors, nurses, to nurse assistants.
What about the closure of rural hospitals? I know there were two hospital closures this last year in Chippewa County.
Well, and Eau Claire.
And Eau Claire. Yeah. Do you expect that to continue? Is that a dire concern?
It's always a concern, and obviously reimbursement rates play a large portion of that. I think you maybe would have seen also those HSHS facilities had a higher, public payer. They were taking on maybe a larger burden towards the Medicaid or Medicare payers. It was the first time in a good 15 years that had seen a hospital close.
Can the state fix that?
It can sure help by increasing reimbursement. I think what we also need to see is just overall support of rural health care and what goes into that. I think there are some opportunities that you'll see the Chippewa Valley still pursue to make an effort to reopen one of the hospitals or at least get more of the care. But what you're also seeing in rural that beyond just the physical structure is service lines ending. We're seeing a very large decrease in the number of OB units. So obviously
some maternity health
issue.
So Joe, I wanted to ask you about broadband. Increasing broadband around the state was seen as a way to help modernize and connect rural communities. There was a lot of federal and state investment in increasing broadband, but we just got a C- on the infrastructure report card from the American Society of Civil Engineers. What more needs to be done around broadband?
Yeah, broadband is such a critical thing in today's world, and it leads back to health, with rural health being supplemented by telehealth, and how those advances can really help fill some gaps, either short-term or long-term. It leads back to workforce development. Again, another key feature that people want to see when they're moving into an area is, can I connect reliably to broadband? If I can't, I'm going to look somewhere else. So I think there's a lot that can be done. The state just tweaked some of the state broadband grant rules, I think, in good ways. Right now, we're kind of in a holding pattern where while we wait for over $1 billion in federal money to come to the state of Wisconsin and to see how that rollout happens and if, in fact, it does connect our most vulnerable areas and our areas that have no service, I think we need to kind of see how that happens before too much more can be done.
Jason, I know rural residents are always very concerned about the environment. There's been a lot of discussion in Wisconsin about PFAS and water contaminants. What do rural voters want to hear from policymakers on that issue?
Well, I think it's that they want to hear more from their peers on things. One of the things that I'm very proud of in Wisconsin is that we are probably the nation's leader in on-farm conservation. You go to other states like Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, and tell them about the producer-led watershed protection grants and our cover crop rebate programs and our nitrate optimization, the works that we do with the Discovery Farms, and you talk about things like no-till practices and variable rate pesticide, herbicide, and fertilizer spraying. These are common practices in Wisconsin. You tell somebody in Wisconsin about no-till, half of them have been doing it for 30 years at this point. So our conservation practices on farm are leading the nation, and continuing to push that, continuing to find ways that environmental practices on farm can actually help diversify farmers' income. I think there's a lot of exciting things, especially with ethanol production or biodiesel production, that can help improve carbon intensity scores on farm, but also give that farmer an additional income source. On the PFAS side, the one thing that I will say that farmers want is they want some sort of liability exemption. These farmers spread municipal source biosolids coming from wastewater treatment facilities with the DNRs okay. And now you've got proposals coming out of the legislature saying, we want to do on-farm, we want to do soil testing and things like that. And those concerns are great for us. We know that this is the water that we're drinking in our wells, and those types of protections from liability against the farmer is important.
Joe, what kind of resources do towns need around PFAS?
Yeah, I think the same type of resources that Jason is talking about are going to be needed specifically for towns, either for the town residents through their own private wells that maybe have been contaminated by non-point solution that they're going to have to mitigate and deal with, to municipal waste facilities, and to your local dump that is going to have a buildup of these chemicals from years prior. That local government's going to be looking for. So I think the grant programs that the state is talking about are good, and we're just hopeful and happy to continue working with our state leaders on getting towards that.
I want to shift a little bit to the politics, rural politics, but I'll first ask you, Joe, I know that a big core responsibility of towns is administering elections. Are you feeling confident things will go smoothly this November for people who do that?
Yeah, I think so. Our local clerks are truly the backbone of the town, and I think that translates across cities, villages, and counties as well. The local clerks are so underappreciated, but they do such a phenomenal job. And I've worked with so many of our town clerks on their prep for elections. Our association helps facilitate election training with the WEC, and yes, I'm confident that our clerks are ready to handle the job.
Well, we'll end. I'd like to ask each of you the same question. Candidates really are certainly fighting for these rural votes. We know there's millions of dollars being spent on ads targeting rural voters in our rural communities. Jeremy, what's your best advice for a candidate who's trying to reach a rural voter? How should they talk about rural issues, maybe some of the issues we've talked about today?
I mean, I think when you get to the legislature, oftentimes those are their neighbors. So they're talking and they know the issues. I think when you get a little higher, don't talk down. I mean, no reason to be condescending at all. I mean, rural issues and the rural economy is something that really is vibrant in Wisconsin and across the country. So we need to do all we can to make sure it functions just as well as every other parts of states.
Joe, advice?
Yeah, I would echo that. They're just the same as anybody in an urban area. They may have a focus on just a few of the core issues, a little more so than maybe more urban areas, but the complexity of those issues is just as much, if not more, in rural areas.
Jason?
Yeah, I think one of the things that rural voters and farmers want to hear about is that you're going to support the local areas. They're concerned about access to basic services. They're concerned about local issues like infrastructure. They want to know that they're sending somebody to Madison or to Washington, D.C. that's going to bring home support to their local community. They don't want to see new programs that are, bringing the urban programs to rural areas. They want to see uniquely rural programs that are going to support that local economy, support that local infrastructure. And when you're trying to advocate for votes and trying to advocate for those communities, making sure that rural focus is important.
All right. I know we'll continue to hear more about rural issues throughout the year, even after the election. So thank you to each of you for joining Newsmakers today.
Thank you.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.